Ray Brown's Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. Birdwatchersgeneralstore.com.
By Vortex Optics, with the VIP warranty. Their unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. Learn more at vortexoptics.com. And by Hog Island Audubon Camp. For full camp schedule, program details, and to register, visit hogisland.audubon.org.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening. Welcome to our show number 1041, during which we'll learn about the new birding dictionary created in a way that only our special guest today, Rosemary Mosco, could do. Also, we'll feature a phenomenally fast flyer that surpasses the speed limit of any U.S. highway. No, it's not a peregrine falcon. But right now, here's a recap, in case you hadn't heard about it. Our Make Your Own Swag Contest 2025. And an update. Some time ago, listeners asked us if they could buy some Talking Birds swag, like hats and T-shirts and such. But we thought instead of sending out a bunch of stuff like that, we'd create some little iron-on Talking Birds patches that we'd send out at no charge that you can attach to a hat or a T-shirt or jacket or a backpack or whatever that you already have. And we turned it into a contest. And the way the contest works is you send us a request for a patch, and we send you one. Then you take a photo of yourself or a friend wearing an item with the patch attached, and send the photo to us. Our judges are choosing favorite photos 5 weeks in a row for great weekly prizes, and then a random drawing in which everyone who sends us a make-your-own swag photo will have a chance to win the grand prize will occur. And that grand prize is, I want to give some details about it because it's pretty special. It's a Vortex HD 16 to 48 by 65 Diamondback spotting scope. Some details. It features ArmorTech, an ultra-hard, scratch-resistant coating that protects exterior lenses from scratches and oil and dirt. It has a built-in sunshade. Its rubber armor provides a secure, non-slip grip and durable external protection, and it's shockproof. Comes with a neoprene cover and a tethered objective lens cap. Plus more goodies that our friends at Vortex, I know, always include for Talking Birds listeners. It has a retail price of $400, and it's the grand prize in our Make Your Own Swag contest. It's not too late to enter. That reminder again, everyone who sends us a photo is eligible to win that beautiful scope in a random drawing. Weekly prizes still to come include a copy of Ken Kaufman's great book, The Birds That Audubon Missed, 2 best-selling books by Mike O'Connor, along with an official Birdwatchers General Store baseball cap. His books, by the way, are Why Don't Woodpeckers Get Headaches? And Why Do Bluebirds Hate Me? Plus an extra special bird feeder from Brome Bird Care. And a $50 gift certificate for wonderful bird-themed goodies from Bird Collective. Those are the preliminary prizes leading up to the grand prize. Send in your patch request right away because time is getting tight. Email your patch request to ray@talkingbirds.com. ray@talkingbirds.com. Do it right away so you don't miss out. This week's winner scores 4 2-pound bags of Birds and Beans coffee. That's a lot of coffee, about $130 worth. And the winner is Tim Cornish from Allegan, Michigan. Yes. Way to go, Tim. We'll get all these pictures up on our website and social media pages, too, by the way. Tim sent us a cool photo with a Talking Birds patch on the front of his wide-brimmed hat out at Ammontrout Milbacher Nature Preserve in Allegan, Michigan. And in the photo, he is plurting, picking up litter while birding. Tim is eligible, as is everyone who sends in a make-your-own swag photo, for that Vortex spotting scope grand prize. If you don't have a patch, please request one ASAP. And if you do have one, please send us your photo right away. Request a patch and send that photo to ray@talkingbirds.com. onto our Mystery Bird Contest preview. That would be the bird. It's a small songbird that summers in Canada and the northeastern United States and winters in South America, northern South America. The male has slate gray upper parts, yellow lores right behind the bill there, a white eye ring, a black streaked necklace, and bright yellow underparts with white undertail coverts. The female is dull gray above and has a fainter necklace. Our bird forages for insects and spiders and shrubs in lower tree branches and sometimes catches prey on the wing. That would be our mystery bird. The contest coming along a little bit later on in the show. And as always, beautiful prizes await. In this case, some of those gorgeous pop-up floral bouquets from Fresh Cut Paper and a one-year subscription to the wonderful birding magazine BWD. Founded in 1978 as Bird Watchers Digest, it's back and better and bigger than ever. We are thankful and grateful to be able to keep thanking Talking Birds ambassadors every week on our show, helping us spread the word about our show and about birds and conservation. That's what our Ambassadors Family program is all about. Thank you to Kat Pater from Holyoke, Massachusetts, and Ernie Morrison from Denver, Colorado, joining our Ambassadors Family. And that way that thing works is we invite you to join up. Just go to the Get Involved tab at TalkingBirds.com. Sign up there. It's very easy to do, and we'll send you a bunch of Talking Birds cards that you can hand out to friends and neighbors at your convenience. Still to come today, we'll welcome science writer, naturalist, and cartoonist extraordinaire Rosemary Mosco, who'll tell us about her hilarious yet strangely useful book, The Birding Dictionary. Also today, Mike O'Connor will join us for a Let's Ask Mike segment, almost live from the archive, about birds that may surprise you by coming to your feeder. And up next, is it possible for a bird to achieve a level flight speed of more than 100 miles per hour? We're about to find out as we meet this week's featured feathered friend. Last week's featured bird was the one considered by many to be the world's most beautiful bird, the lilac-breasted roller. So this week, we figured we'd extend the superlative theme. While the peregrine falcon is generally accepted as having the highest speed in a steep dive, today's featured feathered friend is thought to be the speediest in wing-powered level flight. It's the white-throated needletail, a large swift with a football-shaped body and long, broad wings that gets its name from the pointy end of its tail, which is not forked as in other swifts. Both male and female are mostly grayish-brown, with a white throat and a white patch that extends from the flanks to the base of the tail. The white-throated needletail has been reported to have reached speeds of up to 105 miles per hour, although those stats are difficult to verify since the results have yet to be published. This bird, also known as the needle-tailed or spine-tailed swift, breeds in Central Asia and southern Siberia and winters in the Indian subcontinent, Southeast Asia, and Australia. It's been known to wander to parts of Europe as far west as Norway, Sweden, and Great Britain. We couldn't get an arable recording of this needle-tail's vocalizations, but they're described as rapid, insect-like chatterings, as well as a piping sound, likened to a sandpiper, and a churring twitter. Although this swift faces threats from habitat loss and pesticides, good population news comes from the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, which currently lists this bird as a species of least concern, meaning that it's not facing any immediate threats that would cause it to become endangered. It's Hirundipus caudacutus, the very, very fast white-throated needletail, today's Talkin' Birds featured feathered friend. Welcome again to our show, number 1041. Rosemary Mosco is a science writer and naturalist and creator of books and cartoons that connect people with the natural world. She's written acclaimed science books for kids and adults on topics ranging from the solar system to butterflies to backyard nature. She joined us sometime last year to talk about her marvelous book, A Pocket Guide to Pigeon Watching, Getting to Know the World's Most Misunderstood Bird. And she has now applied her considerable skill in the use of words to a book about words themselves. It's The Birding Dictionary, a tongue-in-cheek guide for people who find themselves obsessed against all logic and reason with birds. And she's here with us now to tell us a bit about it. Good morning, Rosemary.
Hi, Ray. It's so exciting to be here again.
It's great to have you back again. Third time, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, cool. Do I get a prize for the third time?
Let's see. Mike O'Connor gives away pencils at his store. So I'll see if I can get one of those pencils.
Yes, please.
And he'll get one of those to you. Well, you know, there are lots of field guides coming out all the time. And some people say, why do we need another field guide? So I'll ask you a related question. Why do we need another birding dictionary?
Well, first off, I'll say that bring on the field guides. I buy every single one. I mean, you could do a field guide to like just two species of owl and I would buy it because I'm one of those. I'm a sucker. But yeah, there's so many bird books. And this one is a mix of serious and funny. It's mostly funny, but all the words are real. And people keep telling me it's educational. And I think, oh, shoot, you're right. I did work in a lot of facts. But I feel like, you know, with all the serious bird stuff out there, which is wonderful and important, sometimes we need to kind of just laugh and relax and, poke gentle fun at ourselves and birds. So I feel like it's a helpful antidote sometimes to how serious we can all be.
All right. Some good points there. Some books have a section entitled How to Use This Book. You did not include that, perhaps for obvious reasons. although you do have a foreword by Professor Halex A. Whitewash from Hemispingus University in Patagonia, Arizona. I noticed that Hemispingus is not defined in your book, maybe in the next edition.
Oh, so oleaginous Hemispingus is defined, which is just one of my favorite bird names. I put in a lot of definitions that a lot of people will actually want to know about, but some things I confess I just put in because they sound funny, and that's an actual bird name, and I feel so bad for that bird, because really, who wants to be oleaginous?
Ooh, it sounds kind of greasy, but you do have Hudwit for people who don't have time to say Hudsonian Godwit, also a helpful thing there. And this is one I really like, and I'm going to try to read this if I may and see if I can get through it, because I haven't been able to in previous attempts. But here we go. It's Anhinga, noun, a winged creature that can swim with neutral buoyancy, stab its prey to death, launch itself into the air from a submerged position, and soar thousands of feet in the sky. The Anhinga may look like a garden hose attached to a chicken, but only fools underestimate it. I got through it there.
Good job.
By the way, as laugh-inducing as your definitions are, as you pointed out, there are some useful definitions. There is an educational component to the book, except maybe for American Robin, which you define as a device that converts worms into 100 decibel songs outside your bedroom at 4 a.m.
Yeah, a few of the things are not educational. But
there's a dorbler. I didn't know that word, but I think I sort of figured it out what that's about. But you can look in the book and you'll see. But
yeah, that one's that one's more niche, but I just think it's so cute. There's an author named Jeff Vandermeer who has written like a truly disturbing and wonderful series of books. He wrote Annihilation, and he just writes these horrifying books, and he loves to use the word adorbler, which is like a really cute warbler. And I just love it. And I especially love when like horror writers and sci-fi writers are just also you know, thinking warblers are adorable. I think that's really cute.
Nice. And then there's mnemonic. And this is where you even get into politics in the book, as you point out. A change in the song of the white-throated sparrow has eased international tensions between the U.S. and Canada, right? With a little
Yeah, this was written before the current situation, obviously. But yeah, So I grew up in Canada, and in Canada we say that white-throated sparrows say, "Oh, sweet Canada," and then I moved to the States, and you all say, "Old Sam Peabody." So one of these is, you know, Canadian patriotic, and one of them isn't. And so I concocted an idea in which this is causing international tensions. But white-throated sparrows' songs are changing in some places so that they say neither of those things, which I think I say is heralded as a bold move towards peace.
Right,
that
yeah,
part is entirely concocted.
Could only just do it that way in general. That would be great.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you learn a lot of things in the process of writing books, Rosemary. What about in the case of this book?
Well, I think the funniest thing I learned was, or the strangest thing I learned was that I came to the definition of peep, which is, of course, you know, a group of small shorebirds. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. And then I'll make some joke about peeps. But then I started writing down which birds I think are peeps. And I realized I'm not 100% sure which are peeps and which aren't. And then I reached out to a bunch of folks, including the wonderful Ken Kaufman, and I realized people have different definitions, you know, and there may be correct and incorrect ones. But I think I was surprised by, in some cases, the things I thought were known and understood. And then I realized when I'm talking about birders, we all have different ideas about things. And that's totally okay.
Lots of things. Well, the book is fun and funny. And I like the way the great science journalist and Pulitzer Prize winner Ed Yong described it. He called it a laugh-out-loud, funny guide to the ludicrously amazing and amazingly ludicrous world of birds and birders. That's not an easy sentence to say, but yeah.
It's not.
But that's well,
I will say I love birders and I am a birder, so I'm laughing at myself the whole time as well.
Well, I think you've really made it when you get the great Ed Yong to being quoted that way. The book is The Birding Dictionary, a tongue-in-cheek guide for people who find themselves obsessed against all logic and reason with birds. Rosemary Mosco is the author and illustrator. Rosemary, thanks for being on the show again, and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much, and I hope you see many oleaginous birds in your future.
I'll keep my distance. Rosemary Mosco here on Talkin' Birds. Up next, it's our mystery bird contest in just 1 minute.
The flutter of a tail feather, the flash of a wing bar in mid-flight. You don't always have a lot of time to identify a bird in nature, let alone to appreciate its beauty. But with Vortex Optics, you'll have the power to bring every wild moment closer. When you choose Vortex, you're choosing to have a partner in the field as passionate about nature as you are. Whether you're spotting old friends on the backyard feeder or packing for a once-in-a-lifetime trip to add a few species to your life list, Vortex offers a full range of optics and optics accessories for every birder and every budget. And whether the birds are taking you to another state or another country, you're always covered by the Vortex VIP warranty, an unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. If you'd like to learn more, or if you need help choosing your next optic, give Vortex a call at 1-800-4-VORTEX or visit vortexoptics.com.
There's that mystery bird again. On account of this is the actual contest underway here, in which we urge you to call as soon as you possibly can if you think you might know what this bird is. Take a guess if you don't, because a drawing will determine our winner if no correct answer is received. Yeah, the number is this, and I'll give it again, 781-837-4900. That is the number for the mystery bird contest here. It is a small songbird that summers in Canada and the Northeast United States and winters in Northern South America. The male has slate-gray upper parts, yellow lores, a white eye ring, a black streaked necklace, and bright yellow underparts with white undertail coverts. The female looks pretty similar. Dull gray above, though, and a fainter necklace. Our bird forages for insects and spiders in shrubs and lower tree branches, sometimes catches prey on the wing. That's our bird. What do you think it is? Win those beautiful prizes from BWD, a.k.a. Bird Watchers Digest. It's a beautiful one-year subscription. And speaking of beautiful, life-sized pop-up floral bouquets from fresh-cut paper. These bouquets are very, very special. They're very beautiful, for one thing. They also have a small fraction of the carbon footprint of imported flowers, and Fresh Cut also plants a tree for every bouquet they sell. So that's pretty cool as well. 781-837-4900 is the number for our Mystery Bird Contest. One more time, 781-837-4900. Meanwhile, almost live from the archive, let's ask Mike in just 1 minute.
Hog Island Audubon Camp has welcomed nature enthusiasts to its shores since 1936. It's a program of the Seabird Institute, and the island hosts five-night sessions for adults, teens, and families taught by the world's leading naturalists, ornithologists, and artists. Hog Island campers deepen their relationships with the birds and the ecosystems around them during the island's immersive educational camps. New for the 2025 camp season is Let's Go Birding Together. Scheduled during peak fall migration, this session is a safe space for queer birders to connect with nature and each other while learning ways to foster a similar environment in their community's home. For full Hog Island schedule, program details, and to register, visit hogisland.audubon.org.
Mike O'Connor is down there at the Bird Watchers General Store, the famous Bird Watchers General Store, Cape Cod, Massachusetts, joining us here for Let's Ask Mike. And we all know that phoebes don't come to feeders, right, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. You're right. Right. Don't even think about it.
You tried to teach a young bird student that fact, and what happened?
It didn't go my way. I can tell you that didn't go my way. Yeah, I mean, all day long we get questions that we have to, you know, a lot of times it's newbie birders, and we have to give them right advice. A lot of people want to buy a birdhouse, say for a cardinal, and I have to tell them cardinals don't use cavities or birdhouses or nest boxes. They build their own little cup nest in a bush or a shrub or something. And I have a new employee, kind of a newbie birder also, and she says, "Oh, I have phoebes coming to my feeder." And I said, "Oh, well, it's a gray bird, but it's probably maybe a junco or something like that." Because we all know phoebes are flycatchers. They sit on a branch and fly out and grab insects and go back, and that's how they earn their living. And then, like all people these days, she took out her cell phone and showed me a video of phoebes coming to her feeder. And so kind of in my face. And it turns out she had a little stick-on window feeder, a little cup window feeder, and she had it filled with mealworms, hoped to get maybe Carolina wrens or some bluebirds, and instead she was getting phoebes and had to apologize, of course. And then I looked around, and, yeah, there's not a lot, but there's some evidence around the Internet showing other phoebes have found mealworms, and they come and eat the mealworms. Yeah. Now, phoebes, this was the eastern phoebe, and which lives in this, they say, half of the United States, but there's other phoebes. There's black phoebes in the west, and there's sage phoebes in the west. Sage phoebes, I'm sure it's going to get its name changed, but that's what it is now. And they also will come, apparently, to mealworms if they're put out there. They also come more, a more reliable way or a better way to get phoebes is these little, what they call shells, nest shells, and basically they look like a birdhouse, but with no front at all. It's just this shelf that you would put under an eave, because phoebes like to come to buildings, and if you put a little shelf under an eave or under a porch, they'll come and build on those. And they like to build them with mud. So next spring, if you have a shelf, put a little mud patch in there, like you would for like a barn swallow, and or a robin, and they'll come and scoop up the mud and hopefully build a nest. But you can do mealworms. The important thing about mealworms is this time of year you should use live mealworms, because the babies depend on the moisture from the nestlings depend on moisture. Yeah, and the rest of the year, they're probably the dry ones are fine. But this time of year, use live mealworms if you're into mealworms at all.
All right. I want you to know I believe everything you said, Mike. Absolutely. No hesitation.
Thanks, man. I knew I could depend on you.
Talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Mike O'Connor down there at the famous Bird Watchers General Store, and this is our mystery bird. What is that bird? Give us a call and let us know and win those beautiful prizes and show everybody you know what that bird is or that you're a good guesser. 781-837-4900, and we have a call from the city by the bay, and I don't mean Chesapeake. It's Dina in San Francisco, California. Good morning, Dina.
Hi, Ray.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for being up early, but you're a birder, so you're probably up early anyway.
Yeah, I didn't mean to be up this early, but I thought if I was, I might as well call in.
All right, good plan. I like it. And you heard the clues and all that on the mystery bird?
I did.
Yeah, and what was the conclusion to which you came?
Canada Warbler.
That's a really excellent conclusion. Canada Warbler. Exactly right. A beautiful bird, and sometimes hard to see, but definitely worth it. Let's see how we're doing on time here, Dina. I think we have time for a bonus question. That'd be if you'd like to try it.
Sure.
All right, why not? This would be for some feather-friendly protection for windows to keep birds from crashing into them. They do some wonderful work there. Yeah. So this is about last week's mystery bird, the laughing gull. According to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, the adult laughing gull removes the eggshells from the nest after a couple of eggs have hatched. Question is, why does it do this? It's a multiple choice. A, to save the shells to eat later so the bird will have enough calcium to produce more eggs. B, because if the shells are not removed, a piece can become lodged on top of the slightly smaller, unhatched third egg and prevent it from hatching. Or C, maybe just because the laughing gull is an obsessive neatnik. You're like Sheldon Cooper in The Big Bang Theory. Or for older viewers, Felix Unger on The Odd Couple. Anyway, you heard a couple of possibly reasonable answers there. Dina, what do you think?
I think I'm going to go with A.
To save later for calcium. Birds do need calcium for producing eggs, but guess what? In this case, that's not actually it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they are concerned that the piece of eggshell can get stuck on top of another egg, the third egg, and prevent it from hatching. It seems a little strange, but that's what the Cornell Lab tells us, so I guess we have to believe it.
Okay.
All right. Dina, thank you so much. Stay on the line. Jesse will get your info for those prizes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Dina. In San Francisco, correctly identifying the Canada Warbler as our mystery bird. We are just about out of time for this morning. I just want to mention this and give a sad note about Shiloh Schulte, a wonderful bird researcher from Menomet Conservation Sciences. He was killed, sadly, on Wednesday up in Alaska, where he was doing some good conservation work. Shiloh Schulte will remember him. And if you're listening to our show on the 8th of June, we'd like to mention that it's World Ocean Day. Some call it World Oceans Day, but it's a very important day considering all of the threats to our oceans around the world, from climate change to plastic pollution and so much more. Do a search for that, World Ocean Day, if you'd like to consider helping the cause supported by the Ocean Conservancy and Greenpeace and so many more. And one more thing, don't forget to send in your request for a patch or your photo in our Make Your Own Swag contest. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next week.
Ray Brown's Talkin' Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. Birdwatchersgeneralstore.com.
By Vortex Optics, with the VIP warranty. Their unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. Learn more at vortexoptics.com. And by Hog Island Audubon Camp. For full camp schedule, program details, and to register, visit hogisland.audubon.org.